Hallo und herzlich willkommen zur Folge 34 des Denklabors, dem Architektur-Podcast des BDA. Um dem heutigen Thema und den heutigen Gästen angemessen zu begegnen, wurde diese Folge in englischer Sprache produziert. Deshalb geht es jetzt auf Englisch weiter. Welcome to this episode of the Denklabor, a podcast on architecture produced and hosted by the Architects Association of Germany, the BDA. The mass destruction of homes and settlements has become an everyday experience during violent conflicts. This has increased in numbers and intensity, albeit a massive violation of international laws. As UN Special Rapporteur, Professor Balak Krishnan Rajagopal presented a report to the General Assembly of the United Nations in 2022, in which he asks to recognize such violations as standalone crime against humanity. He has called them domicide. Professor Balak Krishnan Rajagopal and Professor Juan Pablo Molestina, Chairman of the Architects Association of Germany in the state of North Rhine-Westphalia, were being interviewed by journalist Ute Winterhager in early December 2024. They discussed the legal aspects of domicide and what deep trauma the destruction of homes can cause to individuals and communities.
It is a great honor to welcome you to this talk, Professor Balakrishnan Rajagopal. And it is a big topic we are featuring today, actually far too big for half an hour podcast. And I admire your courage, Pablo Molestina, to bring on this challenge. The two of you haven't met before. There were a few emails and phone calls across the Atlantic to get in touch and to arrange this virtual meeting between Washington and Cologne. So thank you very much both for bringing up and joining this conversation. Mr. Rajagopal, you are Associate Professor of Law and Development at the Department of Urban Studies and Planning at the MIT and the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the Right to Adequate Housing. Since this podcast is addressed to mostly architects and planners, adequate housing is what we are working on every day, at least in an ideal world. Could you give us a quick introduction into your brief as UN Special Rapporteur on the Right to Adequate Housing? What are you looking at and where?
Thank you. Thank you for having me. First of all, thank you so much for this invitation and to the Architects Association. It's really an honor and a privilege to join this conversation. And I deeply appreciate the efforts that are being taken by architects in Germany to look at the issue of domicide and to ask questions, which is extremely important, especially concerning in Germany for a variety of reasons, but also because Germany happens to be one of the members of the core group of my mandate. In the UN, every substantive mandate is backed by a few countries. And in the case of the right to adequate housing, Germany has been one of the principal supporters of it. So I'm really glad to engage with it for that reason. Now, the UN Special Rapporteurs are independent experts who are appointed by the UN Human Rights Council in order to look at specific human rights issues, in my case, the right to adequate housing. They do not work for the UN, nor do they draw a salary. They have their regular jobs. And in my case, I'm a professor at MIT. In the capacity as rapporteurs, what we do is that we function as global focal points on the particular issue in question. So on the right to adequate housing, I'm the global focal point appointed by states. And in that capacity, what I do are many things. One is I submit two reports every year, one to the UN Human Rights Council, another one to the UN General Assembly. And in both these reports, I develop substantive issues that are emerging or ones that deserve greater attention by the international community. And the second thing we do is we conduct country visits, which are intensive on-the-ground evaluations of how human rights are being protected in particular countries in question, in my case, the right to adequate housing. So my most recent country visit, for example, was over this recent August to Uzbekistan. The third other crucial thing we do as rapporteurs is that we receive a number of complaints from individuals and communities affected by the denial of the right to adequate housing around the world, and we intervene in particular cases with particular countries and try to seek solutions for those cases. I have a global mandate, and the engagement is on broad issues that affect the right to adequate housing.
In July 2022, you wrote a 20-page report to the UN General Assembly in which you presented an intensive examination of the systematic and deliberate mass destruction of homes during violent conflicts, calling it domicide. Even though we all see the pictures in the news every day that show exactly that, the word domicide, oder auf Deutsch Domizid, is not yet widely used. Before we come to the claim linked to your report, could you explain us what exactly describes domicide?
Yes, in that report, I described domicide as a systematic and or widespread destruction of housing in the context of conflict. And what systematic or widespread mean is also that we are not talking about destruction of individual homes, which while it's equally devastating for individuals at a psychological level, we are talking about a larger sort of pattern of destruction of homes. Unfortunately, we find that in the context of conflict, this is becoming more and more common. And it's mainly because of the fact that increasingly we are living in an urbanized planet. Most of us are increasingly urban dwellers. We live in cities. And the military infrastructure, including the communications or intelligence or other infrastructure that is required to fight wars, is located in urban areas. And we see that the military tactics that are used to destroy such targets increasingly inflict indiscriminate or widespread damage to housing. In other words, there is no way to fight a war these days without destroying a whole bunch of houses along the way. On the days of, you know, armies massing against each other out in the field while people live comfortably, civilians can live comfortably away from warfare. In fact, the very distinction between civilians and combatants, which is at the heart of the law that applies to armed conflict, particularly the Geneva Conventions, is increasingly difficult to maintain in today's world as we've all become more and more urbanized. So that is why I propose this definition of domicide. It's intended to look at, as I said, systematic as well as indiscriminate destruction of housing.
Right. And to come back to your report to the UN, what was your conclusion? Did you recommend anything or did you demand anything or was it not in your position to do so?
No. I recommended clearly that states should recognize domicide as a standalone crime under international law. Right now, the destruction of homes is very loosely protected under international law. For example, under Geneva Conventions, individual homes cannot be targeted as military objects. They are not military objects, just like hospitals are not military objects. On the other hand, the threshold on the part of a military commander to engage in an attack against a home is fairly low. The question under the Geneva Conventions is whether a home is being used as a military object. So a state can always claim, as we have seen in the case of the destruction of homes in the case of Ukraine or now in Gaza, that states can always claim that a home is being used for some other hostile purposes, and therefore all homes become legal targets. It's really a very low threshold, and the analysis is really on a home-by-home basis. A military commander in the field is supposed to decide whether it's worth attacking a home or whether such an attack would be proportionate and necessary, and so on and so forth. But there is really no legal prohibition of the mass destruction of homes. I mean, in some cases, maybe you can say if the mass destruction of homes is carried out in such a way that it is intended to prevent a people's ability to inhabit a particular location, then such a mass destruction could constitute an act of genocide under Article 2 of the Genocide Convention. That is exactly what South Africa argued before the ICJ, International Court of Justice, regarding the case against Israel's operations in Gaza. But that's a high threshold because we also have to show, like all acts of genocide, a clear case of intention to eliminate the a people in whole or in part, according to the Genocide Convention. What I have called for in my report is that domicide should be recognized as a crime against humanity, which doesn't require either a nexus with armed conflict, nor does it require a proof of intent. It's really the level of and the extent of suffering of human beings that crime against humanity is supposed to capture And I believe that when you destroy an entire swathe of housing, inflicting such a level of collective suffering and denial of humanity, then it must be recognized as a standalone crime and we should call it domicide.
And in January 2024, about a year and a half, and the start of another war later, after the presentation of your report, the New York Times featured your article, Domicide: The Mass Destruction of Homes Should Be a Crime Against Humanity. I assume this release made the subject public and started an international debate. Pablo, when did you become aware of the topic of domicide, and what made you write the open letter to your colleagues at the BDR?
Well, it was the article in the New York Times, which I read and left a strong impression on me. But I understood the fact that domicide isn't just a destruction of structures, but it's an attack on the continuity of the built environment, which is a fundamental resource. And as an urban planner, I see the built environment as more than physical space. It reflects and shapes how we live and how we interact, almost like a resonance chamber for human activity. When this environment is deliberately destroyed, it's cultural and social violence. It's not just physical damage. So, as a planner, I feel that we need to look beyond technical concerns related to demolition, about which we talk a lot in Germany, like building costs and CO2 emissions, because cities are ultimately about people and they symbolize opportunity and hope, especially in developing countries. Built structures like markets, schools, or workplaces, or homes provide both resources and security. I have a feeling that international law has failed to adequately protect these resources. And without stronger frameworks, we risk irreversible damage to communities. Germany, for example, suffered massive urban devastation during the Second World War. And yet today, it seems to have forgotten those lessons as it participates in two armed conflicts, neglecting its own history. So I feel that a stronger regulation will make us think more carefully about the past and about the future. And as such, we absolutely deserve and should support the Domicide Initiative.
Question to the both of you. How's the discussion going on today? What's following? How is the destruction of houses perceived? Is it the destruction of material values or the destruction of houses in the sense of home and identity and memory and all that's connected? And what will be the long-term consequences of the loss of all these non-material values? Is that part of the discussion as well?
This very much is. I mean, at the global level, the discussion has really, really sharpened and focused attention on all the dimensions of what loss of home actually means. And I cannot agree with Pablo more that a loss of a home is much more than just loss of four walls and a roof or just a material asset. It's about loss of your memory. It's about loss of your identity. It's about something that made life meaningful for you. You know, when you live in a home. So it's really a denial of meaning making. A human rights-based approach, in fact, goes beyond simply looking at a home in a material way and reminds people of the various ways in which homes actually matter more than simply as assets. And that's why I believe that a rights-based approach to housing, in fact, calls for recognition of loss of home as a crime, as domicile. Not simply as a loss of an asset that can be compensated for. So, very often I find that after armed conflict, the focus immediately turns to rebuilding, as it should. But the rebuilding often becomes a conversation solely about simply how much money is going to be on the table, who will pay for it, and so on. But that's very, very narrow. In fact, people have lost more than simply their assets. I mean, would it have been okay for Germans who lost everything in the mass destruction of homes in World War II? To be told that all they had to worry about was simply, you know, how to rebuild whatever was lost. They lost so much more, including the very memory of the places that were utterly annihilated and destroyed. It was a long period of recovery, even after World War II, for places that were destroyed, you know, in cities in many countries. And I studied some of those in close detail. And my sense is that it's very, very important to take the non-material, emotional, psychological elements into account, for which we don't really have a language except the human rights language that we have. For example, the idea of a reparation or a reparative approach to rebuilding goes beyond simply material compensation. So I believe that losing a home is something that causes long-term damage to individuals and communities. It causes trauma. Informed approach to rebuilding and recovery is very, very important. It has tremendous impacts on children. It has enormous impact on old people. Older persons have related to the places where they live for years, and often it's very hard for them to know how to fill the enormous void that's created in their lives when they lose the only thing that made meaning for them in their lives. So I believe that this is increasingly getting recognized, particularly after the two recent conflicts in both Ukraine, in Russia, but also with the complete and utter annihilation of Gaza. There is increasing recognition on the part of countries, including a greater willingness to look at the different dimensions of loss of home around the world. I just returned from the World Urban Forum in Cairo, organized by UN Habitat. A line of discussion there was around the theme of loss of home. So it's clearly the case that loss of home is the increasing sort of material reality that we are living with in today's world. People are losing their homes due to conflict, due to climate change, due to so-called beneficial development projects that all result in tremendous trauma for those who lose their homes. And it's important to recognize that there must be limits for this level of destruction of damage, and we need tools to achieve that. And I believe that recognizing mass destruction of housing as domicide, as a crime, is one of the ways in which we can actually get there.
I absolutely agree with Raj. I would just like to add, or maybe to encourage the definition to be wider than just the home, because yes, you live in a home, but you live not only in a home. You live also in the streets or in the markets. You work somewhere else. You have your records for properties and you have that in an archive. It's not only the home, although I'm not sure how it is juristically. For me as an urban planner, the attack on the urban environment is such that it destroys all aspects of life, domestic and public.
Well, there are other terms that are being used. As you know, destruction of an entire city is often characterized as urbicide. We are also looking at the relationship between a home and its environment, including the landscape, for example. One of the things that I heard when I visited Netherlands last year was in the case of particularly vulnerable communities like older people who are at risk of losing their homes, who they lived in social housing. There is this one gentleman that I spoke to who lived in a social housing in Rotterdam, and the entire social housing facility was intended to be torn down and replaced by more modern options. He's already in his early 80s, and the only thing that he has known for the last 25, 30 years is the home where he has lived. But it's not just the home, but it's also the fact that outside the home, he goes for walks, and then he sort of enjoys the tree that is there with the birds. Those are things that he has gotten related to. And when you destroy an entire complex like that, he asked me, where would I hear the birds again? I think that it's very important what, Pablo, you said, that we need to think about homes as more than simply four walls and a roof. That's exactly what a right to housing approach does. Remember, it's a right to housing. It goes beyond simply home as a singular structure. It takes into account everything that gives meaning to living in that thing called a home. If we go with that definition, we can clearly look at things that deserve protection that goes beyond simply homes in a narrow sense.
I would like to come back to the United Nations and the legal aspects of your report. If domicide was a crime against humanity, what would the consequences be? What would follow when a state or a state leader is held accountable? Is it stop anyone from doing it, or is it just another bullet point on the list?
Well, I wish we could just say that, if anything is criminalized, genocide has been criminalized since 1948. Has genocide stopped, really? War crimes have been criminalized since the Geneva Conventions, at least. Are war crimes stopped? So the reality is not that we expect every single perpetrator to be criminally prosecuted, although Domicide should be recognized as a crime. And I've specifically said that Article 15 of the Rome Statute should be amended to include mass destruction of housing as a domicide to enable prosecution by the International Criminal Court. I've also recommended that states should reform their own laws. For example, there is no reason why Germany cannot recognize the prosecution of domicide, no matter where it is committed, universal crime. Germany allows universal jurisdiction for the prosecution of war crimes and genocide around the world already. And many have been brought before German courts. You know, Syrians, for example, who commit crimes in Syria are hauled up before European courts under the domestic laws of European countries. Why not allow for domicide as well? So also countries that send troops to fight in wars should change their rules of engagement and retrain their military. So they are actually clear that mass destruction of homes is not a legitimate military target. But unfortunately, this is not yet the case. But so there are many things that can happen. It doesn't necessarily have to involve changes at the international level, which can be slow in coming. And even when they happen, it's not clear that they alone will actually deter such crimes. In fact, what we need beyond law is a change in mindset. And that comes culturally. The reason, for example, why people are very careful in categorizing something as a genocide is not because people are afraid of getting punished, but it's because there is a certain odium attached to the word genocide. It's just something that nobody thinks is defensible for any reason. We need to have that kind of level of disapprobation about domicide. And I believe that a lot of that can happen at the cultural level. For example, what is now being done in the case of architects and their stand that I see in Germany is one example. I also see, for example, in the United States, the Smithsonian Design Museum, which is based in New York City, has just launched a year-long exhibit on domicide, showing the way homes have been destroyed by the use of weapons made in the United States, which includes, by the way, a focus on Iraq, on Syria, and on Gaza. So I believe this kind of thing can change people's minds in a way that simply changing, for example, a law cannot do. So both should go together, but it should be more than law.
Pablo, I would like to leave the final words to you because you directed our focus on the subject. What message would you like to send to the BDR colleagues after this conversation?
Well, it's not just the BDR colleagues, but generally to our fellow professionals, planners. I think domicide relates very directly to the issue of demolition, which is a very hot issue at the moment in Germany. As you know, there is a talk of a moratorium on all demolition in order to save the CO2 potential which exists in existing structures. Now, I think domicide is sort of the weaponization of demolition. We need to reframe this conversation a little bit, and we should pay closer attention to the sociological and psychological aspects of demolition, which I think domicide does. We need to rethink also about how we approach conflict resolution. Violence, whether it's physical or cultural, doesn't address the root causes of disagreements. So sure, you can weaken an adversary, but the underlying issues remain. Advocating for nonviolent solutions isn't just idealistic, it's pragmatic and necessary. And finally, as architects and planners, I think we need to recognize the political nature of our work. This isn't just about designing buildings or laying out streets. It's about preserving a sense of continuity, not just physical continuity, but historical and cultural as well. And this applies at all design levels. On an architectural level, it's about respecting the scale and form of buildings. At an urban level, it's about improving the patterns of streets, plazas, and parks, which are available to citizens. And we can't forget the natural environment, as Raj very aptly pointed out. Old trees and shrubs aren't just aesthetic. They support urban biodiversity, providing habitats for birds and animals. So urban ecology isn't just about structures. It's about the entire living fabric of a place. By thinking in these broader terms, we can create cities that are more resilient, more humane, and better connected to their history and communities. So when you think about it, recognizing domicide as a crime against humanity makes perfect sense for us planners. It's about protecting not just physical spaces, but the cultural and social resources that make these spaces meaningful across the entire world.
Thank you both very much for being here with us, for sharing your views and evaluations on what's happening around us. We all know that our personal impact is only very little, but we have to take a stand. And learning the new term, domicide, naming the devastating crime, might at least help to raise awareness. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Raj, especially to you for being here.
Thank you very much.
That was the latest episode of the Denklabor podcast, featuring a discussion with Ute Winterhager, Professor Balakrishnan Rajagopal, and Professor Juan Pablo Molestina on domicide. Please feel invited to raise awareness yourselves. You can find an official statement by the BDA on domicide, along with further links to the UN Special Rapporteur's report from 2022, either in the show notes or on our website. That's it for today. Thank you for listening. Das war Folge 34 des Denklabors zum Thema Domizid mit UN-Sonderberichterstatter Professor Balakrishnan Rajagopal, der Journalistin Uta Winterhager und Professor Juan Pablo Molestina vom BDA Nordrhein-Westfalen. Sie finden mehr Informationen zum Thema Domizid in unseren Shownotes und auf der Website des BDA. Wenn Sie Wünsche, Lob oder Kritik zum Denklabor haben, dann schreiben Sie uns eine E-Mail an denklabor@bda-bund.de. Wir würden uns sehr freuen, wenn Sie diese Folge teilen, unseren Podcast abonnieren oder weiterempfehlen. Das Denklabor ist ein Format des Bundes Deutscher Architektinnen und Architekten BDA. Vielen Dank fürs Zuhören und bis bald.